Blog Talk Radio.
Whoa, today was a quick sit down. Oh my goodness, I just made it to sit down to do the show today, everybody. I was in the kitchen getting water and doing all my prep work, and I was like, oh my God, the show is going to start in 36 seconds. So I made it just with the nick of time. That's my crazy computer making noise behind us. Well, here we are again. Today is Tuesday, July 22nd, and it's your girl, Cy Brown. Thank you for tuning in to another edition of Life Remix Radio, broadcasting live from New York City, weekdays at 12 noon. It is hot. I don't understand where all this heat is coming from. Well, I guess because it's the summer. I don't even know what I'm thinking, but I guess it's just hot. This is in the 90s, so it's hot, hot, hot. Just want to talk to you about a few things before we jump into today's show. Has anybody watched the new Wendy Williams show? I watched it today with Vivica Fox, and she is gorgeous. From what I understand, Vivica said she just turned 44 last week, and Wendy is turning 44 like next week. And they just look so good. I don't know if it's because of the precision of a surgeon's knife or whatever it is, but they, you know, I have to say, surgery or no surgery, these women are still looking good. So I just want to say shout out to Wendy Williams. You are definitely a friend in my head, and I love your show. So a lot of people say she's competing with Tyra. Who cares? There's two black women on television every single day, so that's just, it's all good. Everything is all good. Just to let you know, today's show is brought to you by the Unlock Your Dreams Conference. This event is for anybody that needs motivation and inspiration on making their dream a reality. And the cool thing is I'm being honored at this event. I look back at my life every single day, and I just kind of do what I do. You know, I'm not I don't think any entrepreneur, any mom, any businesswoman does what they do for recognition. At least I know I don't. I do it for personal fulfillment. And that's why I do what I do, and to help people, really. There's no magic to it. Of course, I want to monetize it and get paid, but that's not what sits at the core of what I do. So to have someone call you and reach out and say, we would like to honor you, I don't take that lightly. So, you know, it's an honor and a privilege and a blessing. So I just want to say a big shout out to everybody who's working on the Unlock Your Dreams Conference. It is taking place at the Holiday Inn in Times Square in New York City, and it's featuring Cheryl Ray, who is Salt, the other half of Salt and Pepper. Katrina Ferguson will be speaking there, Shanice Starr, Simone Kelly Brown, and Mr. Obina Endu. Oh, my goodness. See, this is what happens when you start to differentiate yourself and you start to travel in certain social circles. You start to see the same people because like attracts like. And Mr. Endu spoke at an event that I was at last week, so I just think he and I are destined to work together in some capacity because we are just traveling in the same social circles, and he is such a good dude. So big ups to Mr. Endu, who's now considered a friend. For ticket information, just call 646-406-9650. Sorry about that. 646-406-9650. The chat room is now open, so just hit us up in the chat room. Today, we are talking to the author of the book, Snitchcraft, and what it is to snitch, what it is not to snitch, what happens, who does it affect. I mean, this whole snitching thing is ridiculous. And, you know, just in me working in the hip-hop industry for so long, so there was this big story about Cameron snitching and Jim Jones, and, you know, Lil' Kim went to jail because she couldn't snitch. And as adults and quote-unquote grown-ups, we're like, oh, this is stupid, you need to tell. But then how many times do we tell little children, oh, don't be a tattletale, or stop being a tattletale, go back outside and play. So are we, in fact, planting the seed of this whole anti-snitching thing, I'm going to call it, because I can't think of any other thing to call it, in children as young as 3, 4, and 5 years old? So we have a very special guest joining us who will remain anonymous until we bring him in on the call. So in the meantime, we're just going to jump right in to our show. Hello, it's Saeed. Are you live with us, Miss Author of the book Snitchcraft?
Well, hello. How are you today?
Hi, how are you? Can you tell my listeners who you are and why you wrote the book?
Okay, first I'd like to say congratulations to you for your
Thank
award.
Thank you.
And I'm sure it's much earned.
Thank you.
But my name is Idrea Davis, and I'm the author of Snitchcraft. And actually the reason I wrote the book is listening to some of the stories about the other side of snitching that many people don't hear about, and really what a lot of the activist organizations were fighting against, the whole snitch syndrome, and long before this whole phenomenon started with the hip-hop community, there were activists fighting against the government's use of snitches. So there are two sides to that whole snitch syndrome, and I heard so many stories that I didn't believe. And after I kept hearing different stories, working out in the civil rights and civic engagement arena, I heard a lot of the young people talk about these things. So I started doing more and more research and ended up with a book.
Well, you know what? It's really funny because, and I think it's important, I think it's really important that the point that I made earlier, how we say, oh, this snitching is wrong, these irresponsible rappers, this is ridiculous, Lil' Kim's going to jail. But how many times did your mother or your caregiver perhaps tell you, girl, you better stop being a tattletale, go back outside and play?
Yeah, well, we did. We were taught to tell.
Well,
if you, somebody was really, you didn't want to be a tattletale. No, you're right. We're all taught not to be a tattletale. But if someone was doing something wrong, you were taught to tell. If my sister or brother were doing something wrong, I was obligated to go say, well, you know, this is what they did. So, no, we did tell a little bit. But I, on that note, I'd like to say that we need to distinguish between a snitch. When you say Little Kim and a lot of those people were engaging in some activity that was incorrect. And so when you talk about snitches, that is negative. And it has that negative connotation because it normally is criminals talking about criminals and telling on criminals. And so if you're engaged in wrong activity and you're down with your boys and you go and tell, that whole, I think the phenomenon applies to those people. Now, what they have done in mainstream media is make it apply to witnesses and concerned citizens, which is the outrageous part, because if you see a witness a crime, you're a witness and you should go forward. And if you see criminal activity happening in your community, you should tell. So there are two, that's not a snitch. That's a concerned citizen.
But I think one thing we have to say, and I don't honestly have an opinion either way, so I just want to let everyone know, I really don't have an opinion either way. I looked at it as an only child. I would see kids doing wrong things all the time, and I would never tell because I was an only child and I wanted friends. You know, when you're 7, 8, 9, you see somebody throw something and break a window, I'm just running. I'm not saying anything because I didn't want to lose a friend. Now, as silly as that sounds, you know, at this point in my life, it sounds stupid. But when you're 8 or 7 or 9 or 10, let's move it closer to 10. Because by the time I was about 10, I was able to kind of go outside without supervision, you know, just kind of be around the house, don't go too far. I think at that age, the ability to have a friend or say I have a friend overrode my feeling of I'm a good citizen. Do you see what I'm saying?
Right, so there was that peer pressure.
Exactly. There was definitely peer pressure. Can you talk to me a little bit about the book?
Okay, the book is about a nightclub owner that left Harlem, went to Long Beach, California, and established, he had to work really hard to build a multi-million dollar nightclub. Now, in Harlem, he was a numbers runner, and, you know, he lived the street life, but he turned his life around, built the club, and eventually was set up by a dishonest snitch. His whole family actually was arrested, and he ended up getting time. And the story goes on to sort of his court case and trying to, you know, his struggle to get out of a prison. And during that struggle, he has somewhat of a transformation because, of course, in the beginning he was about money, and that's it, and money and family. He really was about family and family values and raising his son the right way, but then he still, you know, focused on the money. So he had somewhat of a transformation spiritually, which is sort of, you know, it's not an obvious in the book, but it's underlying messages that are in there. But I can't tell you really what happens, but he does find out who snitched and why, and that the fact, the why the person snitched is really what is wrong with the criminal justice system, because we have so many people that are going in and taking down other people based upon a lie, because they either, one, want to get their sentence reduced, or two, want to make money. And there are people making real money in that industry just telling on people. And we have collateral damage, like the 92-year-old woman in Atlanta, that we see that there are people that just make a living snitching. And so that's the problem. So even though there's a problem in the community with people maybe not telling what they should tell, there's also a problem with the government's use of snitches, and combined with the mandatory minimum sentencing guidelines, it sort of pushes people to tell whatever they can tell, even if it's not true.
Right, and I think that's what happens too. I mean, I know I watch enough Law & Order, Law & Order SVU, Law & Order CS, where all these shows where they have, it's called confidential informants, however you want to call it. And usually they're like the lowest of the low, and they may give them a pack of cigarettes or you know, whatever it is. You know, how many times have we seen, I watched The Wire. Now, I didn't get hooked on The Wire until, like, it was about to go off the air, and I just couldn't get past all the profanity. but I loved the show. And when they had an episode with the children in season four, they had Bubbles, who was ducking low in the car, in the back seat of the police cruiser, you know, and they were looking for a culprit and a criminal. And therein lies, again, the whole concept of, well, they call it a confidential informant, but now this dude is a marked man on the street. Do you see what I'm saying? It's really a tough.
But then when you look at it now with the situation in the with the 92-year-old woman in Atlanta that got shot by the police. What happened was they caught a snitch earlier that day, and they told him he had drugs on him, and they told him, well, if you don't tell us something, we will take you to jail. And so,
really?
Yeah, and so he said he gave them an address right off the top of his head. So they went and kicked in the door and shot a 92-year-old woman because this boy wanted to go wherever he was going to, you know, do his drugs. So that was the first snitch. The second snitch is the one they called after the incident because they figured he was good for a lie, because they know their snitches are liars. So they said, we need you to cover for us. You know, we kicked in this door, et cetera, et cetera. And he almost did until he found out it was a 92-year-old woman, and he came forward and told them, you know, told the truth. He went to the FBI. But the bottom line is now that same snitch is suing the city of Atlanta because he was making $40,000 a year as a snitch, and because they've revealed him. Now, he's a criminal. He had a record. He was getting high. Do you see? And see, these are the people that they have out here, and they're making money. And I'm not talking, $30,000 is not the low. I mean, there are people that make really good money. When I just, it's amazing, I'm telling you. Some of the money they're making, and some of the money, I'm telling you, might entice me to tell a little story, you know, the way they're making some of it.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's a problem when you deal with criminals, and they're already criminals, so if you steal, you will lie, you know, because you
Oh, gosh.
And that's the part we don't, you know, and I went along thinking, oh, he had to have done something. You know, when people would, a set of twins that graduated from Howard University, that the Sentencing Project is working on their case.
Uh-huh.
And it was one of those, you can look them up, as the Garrison twins graduated. They were on their way to law school. And they ended up in the middle of some auto. They had taken their car to get fixed. The auto worker was busted with a lot of drugs, so he started pointing fingers. They never found any drugs on the kids, no drugs in their house. They lived with their parents all the way through school. One worked for the Justice Department. They worked their way through college, graduated and everything. Those boys, the one that got caught with the drugs got 2 years, and the boys, one got 16 and a half years, and the other one got 19 years in the federal penitentiary. And they're working on their cases now. So clearly to me, I don't care. I mean, even if the boys had anything remotely to do with it, I'm wondering why you caught the man with all of the, you know, this drugs. But because he gave substantial assistance, he is getting 2 years, and these kids are caught with nothing. And all you need is the word. If somebody says, yes, well, you know, I talked to him, it's a conspiracy. And they've got him. And we've got 2.3 million people in jail and criminals on the street, like mad. So that therein lies the problem. When we have the violent criminals on the street and all of these people locked up, you know, we have the highest incarceration rate in the world, 2.3 in prison or jail. It doesn't, and we're all scared to walk the streets because people are stealing and robbing like mad. So something's wrong with the system.
It is. I have a special caller on the line, and I'll share with you who he is in a moment. But I want to just give a little background of this situation, and then I'm going to chime him in. This individual. you know what? I'm not even going to do that. I'm going to bring him in and let him share his own story. And the person who I'm bringing in is my husband, who was accused of being a snitch. And we were not allowed by this individual who was accusing him of being a snitch to go to where the projects that my husband's parents lived in because our life was threatened. Oh. But the funny thing is, here's the kicker. 2 weeks ago, we went to one of my husband's good friend's birthday party. He was turning 40 years old. And at the party, you know, everybody, it was a picnic outside. And I saw my husband talking to this guy. So I walked up, you know, it's one of his friends I had never met. So I'm talking to the guy, and, you know, the three of us are standing there. We literally just, you know, talked about our kids, talked for like 30 minutes. So someone was taking photographs, and on the way home in the car, I looked at one of the photos they had given us, and I said, well, who is this? And he said, oh, that's such and such. Girl, if I was driving the car, I would have slammed on the brakes. That's the same person who wanted to kill my husband about 10 years ago for quote-unquote snitching. So I want to bring him in on the conversation, and I would like to get your opinion on the other end. Is that cool?
That's great.
Perfect. All right. Son, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can
okay,
you hear me?
Okay, cool. Yeah, we can hear you. It's good to have you. Thanks for joining us. I'm bringing you in as a caller, not necessarily as a guest, but just somebody who has experience because Adria's book, Snitchcraft, is so important and so real and so relevant. And I want everybody, and I'm saying this right now, you know, if you're listening to my show, I'm always promoting whoever I have on the show, buy her book. Don't just listen to the interview. Adria, how can they buy your book?
Well, you can go to www.snitchcraft.com and all of the online retailers. You can order it in Borders and Black Book stores, especially there in New York. Black Book stores do have it.
Okay, what I'm going to do is I'm going to make sure that website is up so it's also on the archive. And a lot of my listeners call in or listen out from work or they download the podcast from iTunes. So at least if we discuss it, they'll know how to get it for future reference. In case you want to call in and speak to Adria, the number is, ready, 347-633-9113. Son, if you could just share a little bit about what happened around the scenario of you being accused of snitching.
Well, it happened, we was all hanging out. We were all good buddies. We happened to be going to a bachelor party, and we all moved from the area. People lived in different states, Connecticut, New Jersey, so we all got together for a bachelor party. We went out for a ride. Didn't even make the bachelor party, got pulled over by the cops. One of my friends had a gun. We knew he had it, and he threw it under my car. So they picked me up for the gun. And I told them, it's not my gun. I don't know whose gun it is. So they picked everybody up that was with me, and everyone said, it's not my gun. It's not my gun. So we wind up getting out that same night because someone said something. Out of everybody that was there, everybody that went in front of me must have said something about me because I was moving up in life, getting away from my area. So I wind up taking that rap for that. Well, anyway, I come home, and I'm labeled as a snitch. I'm like, what are you talking about? Whoever was there told. I didn't tell anything. So I had to deal with this guy every day. I mean, my parents lived out there, but I'm not a punk, and I never was a punk, and I always stand up for what's right. So I would come out there, and my dad would say, please go home. I don't want you getting hurt, or I don't want you hurting anybody else or anyone getting killed over some nonsense. So I listened as a man. I took his advice, and I left. Came back once in a while, and I seen him. A couple of times he shot at me. He never hit my car or anything, but I guess he was threatening me. But I'm the man I am. I don't run from things like that because I know who I am and I know what I didn't do. It so happened about maybe 10 years went by, maybe a little longer, and I always had this feeling about him, and he had a feeling about me. And one day he said something to me, and he kind of brushed it off and says, you know what, it's okay, don't worry about it. But that was some years ago, and that was the last time I seen him, about 10 years. So anyway, we went to this picnic, and I happened to run into him. And he said, what's up to me? And I said, what's up to him? It was no, like, a fighting what's up. It was just, how you doing? We got to talking for a while. My wife didn't even know who he was. We talked for about hours, about our kids, about our jobs, about our life, what we went through, and you know, how we together now. And I happened to tell my wife that was the guy who claimed that I snitched on him. My wife couldn't believe it. I said, yeah, that was him. We had a decent conversation. But the whole thing in a nutshell is that if we would have kept on doing this, every day we met or every time we met one another, either one of us would have been dead, one of us would have been in jail, and none of our parents would have seen any of us, or we wouldn't even have kids of our own to relate to a situation like that. So after all that's said and done, it's like when you grow up, you have to really get rid of all that nonsense when you was a kid and become a man or adult and live on, and that's what we try to do. So I had a great time talking with this fella. We grew up together. I mean, the picnic that I went to, we all grew up, and we've known each other for 30 years. That's a long time to know one another. We know our ins, our outs, and, you know, we had great times. And to make a long story short, like I said, we finally came together in agreement. And he figured out, and I figured out, that was a long time ago. We were young kids. We have families now. We have other things ahead of us. So, it's, like I said, it was a hard task to deal with that because when I went out there, I always felt that urge that I've always had to look over my back, and that's an awful feeling of someone labeling you as a snitch when you're not. So that's just kind of my story, and I'm glad that my wife put me on here to tell a little bit of it.
Well, I'm impressed, and both of you are very blessed to have gotten beyond it.
Right.
It is. It's a scary situation. And when my producer, Shamika, mentioned your book to me, Adria, I just was like, I need to talk with her. Did you find in your research or anything like that about your books that when you were penning the book that you came across other stories like this? Because now we can go back and look and say, look how stupid. You guys were dumb. Imagine if you'd have killed each other. And they're not now. They're 40 years old laughing about it, but did you find that you did any research or anything like that for your book?
No, because I was dealing with the other side of snitching. However, let me just say this. I've written articles, and I have a problem with mainstream media's portrayal of things. You know, a lot of it came from the hip-hop community, but at the same time, there's no effort to tell these kinds of stories, to talk about how crazy that side of it is. If you notice, you know, we have people with the pen and the power to get those stories across, but when you look at Law and Order, we know that they have done, if you watch it like I do, they've done quite a few of those snitch stories where they make the black community look really bad. They had one where the kids were playing around a dead body, and I can't believe for the life of me that goes on. But anyway, they don't venture to tell the stories that would make a kid sit back and say, well, you know what, that's stupid, you know.
Yeah.
And now look how they're able to be friends now or speak and be cordial or whatever because it was all foolishness. We don't hear that. It's either one side or the other, you know. So clearly you guys need to get out and make sure he tells that story more often so these young people know how foolish what they're doing. It's no different than what you were saying, the tattletale thing. It's that childish little behavior. Don't be a tattletale. And when you may do it when you're 7, and by the time you're 8 or 9, you've forgotten all about somebody tattletaling on you. So.
Well, I mean, it's funny because my husband is so far removed from what I do on a regular basis, extremely supportive. But one of the things that I do with this show, just the whole concept of Life Remixed, and I say this almost every day, we have an entire generation that has to relive and rethink everything our parents taught us. And just in so doing, how do we move forward? And it's because of people as courageous as you to write a book called Snitchcraft. It's people as courageous as my husband that he was perceived as a snitch in a project in Queens,
in
New York.
That's something deep.
Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I remember when my little son, my younger son is now 14, but when my younger son, Miles, was little, you know, we lived in Jersey. His parents lived in Queens. I said, you know, you want to go see your parents today? He was like, no. Almost a year went by before we even went to see my in-laws, which is bananas. And then when we started going back to visit my in-laws, we would go early Sunday morning or, like, right, you know, maybe when his mom would come from church, and we would just leave before it got dark. I mean, it's bananas. We have a caller calling from 919-395. Caller, do you have a question for Adria or for Charles? Hello? Caller? Okay, I think we lost her. But it's all good. I'm sorry. Adria, so now with the book, how is the book being received?
Oh, it was very, very well. And there's a after the book section that gives statistics. It talks about things you can do to make change, like get out and vote and volunteer. And then it also gives organizations that are working to reform the criminal justice system, because
mm-hmm.
I really am passionate about the fact that we need to start spending more money on education than we do on incarceration. So definitely it's well-received. It did good in the prisons, and then a lot of the activist organizations have pushed it, like November.org and, people from Sentencing Project. So it's done well.
You know, one thing I want to touch on now, as you know, I come from the hip-hop industry, and
I wanted to talk about that, but go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, I come from the hip-hop industry, and that whole industry has its own dynamic. I made my exodus, and there's a whole lot of other responsible people that want to get out, but they don't know what else to do. I've had many of my peers in the industry say, Sai, how did you get out? How did you make your money? What do you do? Like, you really have to go through a detox to get out of the industry. But it's because I realized, and by the grace and goodness of God, that that's not the best place for me. But just that whole concept of snitching, thuggery, saggy pants is the image that's projected when I know better. I know the people that are making moves, making power moves in the industry have college degrees, up their pants, and they are not thugging it out on 149th in Amsterdam. Can you speak to that?
Oh, can I speak to that? I'm from Englewood, New Jersey. Okay.
Oh, my gosh, my neighbor.
That's where I'm in Atlanta now, but I'm from Englewood, and I'm from old school Englewood, so I watch hip-hop world, okay? And I know what hip-hop was when it started out, and it wasn't about thuggery. It was about having some mess and having something smart to say. And so with that, we have, you know, the whole transition to some nuttiness. And I know quite a few, we do the same thing, PR, so you know the background.
Yeah.
I know quite a few of them that went to college and got degrees. Now, they may be perpetrating. I know some of them in L.A., when I was in L.A., that were playing that gang thing, and they came from very well-off black families in Chicago, not even L.A. So, you know, we know that it's an image that they project, and the sad part about it is that they don't ever stop to say, look, this is all entertainment.
Yep.
Let me tell you what I really do. And to me, I was so afraid watching this urban fiction going in the same direction, and that's sort of what also compelled me to do the book, because I really feel like if you look, you can write urban fiction, you could tell a street story, and you can still have redeeming value, you can have family values, a strong black man, teach about education, and also put some spiritual messages in there. You don't have to be obvious about it, but if you want to write, write, and say something that means something. And that's where the hip-hop community just got totally off track. Nobody was saying anything to mean anything. They were just saying something to say something. And these kids started believing the hype, and it's a real scary scenario. We know spin can make people believe anything, just like you told.
Just ask the White House.
Oh, hello. And wait a minute, if we want to talk about snitching and somebody teaching and setting examples that you don't talk, we can start right there in Washington, D.C.
Oh, you are so right. You are listening, everybody, to Adria Davis, who's the author of the book Snitchcraft. Her website is snitchcraft.com. The chat room is now open. We've got more Andre, Drop and C Radio, Guest 177, Life Remix Radio, all in the chat line. Hit us up. Right now, we are moving into the second half hour of the show. I am so proud the show is now an hour long. Woo-hoo! So we are moving on up. We do have a caller, from 919. Are you there?
Yes.
Hey, do you have a question for Adria or my husband, Charles, about snitching or this whole concept of snitching? Or would you like to make a comment?
Well, I guess if I had to ask a question, my question would be to either one of you, do you feel as though it is ever a time when snitching is, I guess, crossing the loyalty line, you know, because sometimes people snitch because it's for safety reasons, and then other times it can cross that boundary of loyalty. I mean, can you talk about that a little bit?
Thank you. That's a great question. Adria, you want to pick up that question?
Well, I think your husband was the one that was being loyal.
John, you want to answer that question? She's asking, do people, if I'm understanding this correctly, do people call just out of loyalty? I mean, do people snitch out of loyalty, or can you speak to that?
Well, I think, you know, living in a project, if you snitch, then you're not loyal to the people that you're dealing with. But once you make a move to a different area in your life, all of that becomes obsolete. You don't want to be dealing with that anymore. And I was at a point in my life where I was making a transition to come out of from where I was, and they couldn't quite understand that. So the only way to probably pull me back there was to say that I did that, which I never did. And so, you know, yeah, it's loyalty. It really is loyalty. But then loyalty, where is loyalty when you have Gotti's right-hand man squealing on them? You got all of these people that don't want to go to jail squealing on people or dropping a dime. I mean, it's a non-winning situation. I mean, if you've seen somebody kill your brother and you know who did it, you're not going to say nothing? I mean, that gets me. That makes me upset with that. You see it happen to one of your buddies, you're not going to say nothing? All you're going to do is retaliate? Retaliate is not the key. The key is to fix the problem, to help these brothers. I mean, it's not saying you're going out your way to be a tattletaler. But if something happened to my family and somebody knows about it, I would hope they would say something, and not, you know, better off saying something than saying nothing at all. But like I said, I never snitch, and it's loyalty. When you have loyalty, the only loyalty that I really trust, God above and my family. Those are people that's not going to do anything to me to hurt me. Anybody else that's in the street, they're not after my good, and I understand that. That's why I'm a man that deals with myself all by my lonely.
Well, I'm sorry. I guess what I was saying is let me make it a little bit more clearer. You might not have ever been in a situation, but there are probably people who have been in a situation that they may have had to snitch, and it's going against another family member. So that's what I mean about the loyalty issue. You know, like say you're snitching on somebody, you saw somebody kill your brother, but supposed it was your sister. You understand what I'm saying? So
right.
That's what I mean. That's when it's kind of touchy. That's the point I was trying to make.
I want to interject something. I have to say, too, we're also listening to the wisdom of somebody who made their exodus from the projects and project life. You know, so you're also speaking, you know, all of these opinions are coming from somebody who's 40-plus years, not somebody who's 17. Adria, did you ever discuss or interview people for your book specifically, or did you just write?
No, I talked to a lot of people, but they were more of the people that had been impacted by snitches.
Mm.
So they truly were impacted by snitches. So it wouldn't be really the same situation. And never anyone that it was any family member or anything like that, but I would assume that would be a very troubling situation. I did read something not too long ago that's exactly what they were saying, that so many of the people in different neighborhoods, it's so much that if your house is not right, how can you send somebody down the street? If your kids are out there slinging drugs, it's really hard to point the finger across the street. And so
right.
many people have that going on that, you know, you just, even the ones in the house that would like to say the right thing, you can't because your house is not together.
You are so on point. We have another caller. Caller calling in from 803 area code. Are you calling in to listen or do you have a comment or a question? Caller
Hello?
From 803, are you there? Do you have a question or would you like to make a comment?
Oh, I was listening. I didn't know. Actually, I was on the radio. I'm sorry.
It's all good. I'm going to put you back on hold. Thanks for listening.
Okay.
We just got hit up in the chat room. Drop and See Radio says, I'm sorry. If my brother or sister committed a crime and I know, I will turn them in because I love them. That's my loyalty.
And that's
well,
wonderful.
That's beautiful.
That's saved their lives.
Yeah. Well, wasn't there a story in Atlanta, and you're in the Atlanta area, and correct me if I'm wrong, wasn't the guy who, there was a black guy who, I hope I'm not messing up the story, who got out of jail, and then he drove up into Gwinnett County and kidnapped that white woman who just talked to him for hours. Wasn't he turned in by his family?
No, I don't think, the girl ended up turning him in, I believe.
Oh, okay. Well, then maybe there's another story. What about Sheriff Brown? I know there's a recent story that I just saw on the news where some criminal in Atlanta was turned in by their family. And I read so many.
One of the sheriffs in DeKalb County, somebody shot somebody.
Yes.
I think that one of the family members testified or something against.
Okay, so I know I'm not bugging. See, this is the problem. What happens when you go into when you go into information overload? I read so many newspapers and so many news blogs. Sometimes I get my facts messed up, but at least I tell you. Look, I'm not sure where I read it.
Yeah, but I know I read it. I'm like that. I read a lot of news too, but I can vaguely remember something to that effect.
Exactly. So, I mean, and just like Drop and Seed Radio said, he's like, well, you know what? But see, here comes another one. That would be a hard thing if, God forbid, one of my sons did something wrong. You know, I don't even want to put myself at this moment in that position to have to make a decision. But what about all the mamas out there who they know their son is slinging drugs
yeah.
and don't say anything, and they're like, oh, baby, you just got mommy a new couch and the boy is 16 years old.
Oh, well, that's what I'm saying. When you're accepting that money, then you're part of the conspiracy on that one. So.
I have to agree. Now, I know my children are teenagers. One is 18, he'll be 19, and the other one is 14, and they're always broke. Don't come. If I see a new pair of jeans, my oldest son came with a new pair of sneakers, and I was all up in his grill. Where did those come from? Where did you, because I know I didn't buy them,
right,
and
right.
I know he's not working.
Exactly.
I want to know. Now, ironically, he swapped some video game or something with somebody, and it was legit. But the point is, parents need to take responsibility for these kids too, especially when they are the 10, 11, and 12, and 13, because as it relates to this whole topic of snitching, if you know your child is out there doing something they have no business doing, at that point it does fall back to the parents, and
right.
the onus does rest with you. I know that's your baby. I know you don't want to see anything bad happen to him, but what can you do? And that's what Drop and Seed Radio says. He just said, my boys know if they sell drugs, and I know they better not drop the soap. It's called reaping what you sow. Drop and Seed is with us every single day in the chat room, so I just want to say thank you for that. Yeah, so that means you're not going to harbor them, huh? I guess that means you're going to let them go to jail.
That's right. But you know what? And they still might act up. But you know what? They won't act up in the house with me because, you know, I
right.
have two boys, and I went through, you know, my little days of whatever. But you can be hard at it, but you will do it somewhere else. You know, and that's the way we were brought up. And eventually you'll learn if you want to be hard-headed, you'll learn, as opposed to those ones that don't say a word if they did
yeah.
wrong, you know, and they just embrace it and let them stay up in the house doing whatever they want to do, then you got a problem. And those kids will never, ever learn because we all might have done some crazy things when we were younger, going to college, doing this or that. But the thing is that it's unacceptable behavior. And
yep.
you need to know, whatever you do, even when I snuck out at night, I knew it was unacceptable behavior, period.
You're right.
Yeah.
You know what? And the thing is, just instinctively, people know the difference between right and wrong. I'm going to chime 919 back in. Are you there, caller?
Yeah.
Okay, you have a question?
Yeah, I wanted to commend you all for what you were doing, number one, because, you know, a lot of times we have things on the radio that are unnecessary and irrelevant, and this is a very positive show that you're having. But the one of the points I wanted to make is, do you think that people send the wrong message by offering rewards? You know, sometimes people just snitch because they want to collect on money. It's not because they have good moral value. They do it because they need the money.
Good
That's
point.
Exactly what my novel is about. It's about the fact that there are people that it's a money-making industry for them, that they are professional snitches, and they are criminals if they are, and a lot of the snitches that when I did my research, a lot of them, their background happened to be fraud, and I'm like, okay, now if they had a background in fraud and they found out they can get $50,000 because, you know, they get a certain percentage of what they take down, so you find somebody that has a multi-million dollar nightclub, that means that the seizure laws, you're going to get a certain percentage of whatever they seize, and the government comes in and seizes everything. So, therefore, a $1 million club, yes, just made $100,000 and had to offer no proof. So that
what?
Is very exactly. That's what I'm talking about. And it's true. I'm telling you, look up these Garrison boys. Go to the Sentencing Project. Go to November.org, and there are people that are making. Now, not all of them are making 100. You know, PBS did a special on a snitch that was making millions of dollars.
Are you serious?
Yes. I'm telling you, go to PBS.org. Go to November.org. I'm telling you, it's going on. And so many of us are just like, nah, that can't be real. But it is. It is. And I'm telling you, you pay me $1 million, I might point my finger at a couple of people myself. Now, I couldn't do it, but I'm just saying that is what will go through somebody that's already a criminal. They're fraud, you know.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's really, and that's really what my novel is about, the fact that, you know, we have that going on. And the system, that just encourages, like the caller said, it just sort of entices people that are even the ones that are not total criminals but borderline, you know.
Right.
You know, they're going to get out there and get their hustle on. We need to make a living. Heck, the economy's getting bad. If you could pay.
Well,
go ahead.
No, keep going. I wanted to touch on the economy. Keep going.
Yeah, if they're getting paid, you know, like the one here in Atlanta, he's suing, saying that $30,000 to $40,000 a year. So that would be, you know, just average amount. But heck, that's good money for him when all he has to do is get up and hang in the street, smoke weed or crack with his friends, and turn a few people in.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, and then there is, of course, the collateral damage, like the 92-year-old woman. There's another little young girl out in her name, I can't remember, but in Florida, they put her out there, 23-year-old white girl. She didn't know what she was doing, going out there trying to, you know, set somebody up because she had gotten busted. They found her out in the field somewhere dead. So, you know, it's just a corrupt environment. Yes, it's very scary out here. And the police just need to start doing a little more policing and get the corrupt ones out of their office, because some of them are dealing the drugs, and try to do the right thing, you know. But this is very scary, the way they're setting these people up. And because of the laws, the conspiracy laws, it's so difficult to get around it. And then we look at, when you look at the amount of time with the mandatory minimum, there's some, Kimber Smith, who was pardoned by
yes.
President Clinton, She's such a wonderful wonderful young lady, but, you know, went on to finish college, gone to law school, Howard Law School. These are people that can contribute to society, and they're getting, she had 24 years. Had it not been for her parents fighting and fighting and fighting, that girl had 24 years.
Yeah, I heard the story of Kimba Smith. Can you just brush up my listeners who may not know quickly about who she is?
Kimba was a, I think she was 19 years old. You know, she was two professional parents in Richmond, and she went on to college in Hampton. She hooked up, her boyfriend was a drug dealer, and they busted everybody, you know, got her but didn't get him. They busted her, not with anything, but they wanted her to tell. Now, they claimed that some of the money that she had taken from one place to another was drug money, so that's how they put her in the conspiracy. But they wanted her to tell, and she didn't tell on her boyfriend. And then finally, when she went to tell, it just so happened that her boyfriend had gotten killed over the weekend when her parents finally had convinced her to tell. So they didn't, you know, they didn't accept that the boy was dead. So instead, she ended up with 24 years. She had never, you know, they acknowledged that she was not dealing drugs or anything, but because of the mandatory minimum sentencing guidelines and the conspiracy, sometimes the conspiracy charge carries a heavier time than the charge itself. So, but the they fought and fought, and George Curry, you know, journalist, did a big story, and it just started getting around, and President Clinton, that was one of the last pardons he did before he left office.
You know, if anybody has ever had the opportunity to hear Ms. Kimba Smith talk, she is an amazing woman. We've chatted a couple of times. I've never had the opportunity to work with her, but she is amazing. Caller from 919, you have a question?
Yeah, one last question because I'm about to go back to work. Would you have any advice, and this is for either speaker, the young man or the young lady, what would be your advice to the person that is in a neighborhood or in a situation and they are scared to sniff because they think that it might be detrimental to their health? What would be your advice to that person that may have something they want to tell? How can they go about doing it and remain safe and get the word out to the proper authorities that they need to?
Charles?
Well,
are you still there? Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's really hard to do that because it's a catch-22. Either you have to leave where you're at, make a new identity, or, you know, you stuck there and you know you're going to always look over your shoulders. It's a hard decision to make, and I can't quite call that. I mean, you either leave there or you just disappear and just go and say the right things and just leave. That's my thing, I believe.
Well, let me just add something as well that I heard on the radio. Some callers calling in talking about them reporting crimes to the police and the police being involved. So the next thing they knew, the criminals were knocking on their door. So it's also something that you have to be careful who you speak with.
Right.
Wow.
So the police need to upgrade their system for protecting snitches.
Right.
Yeah, to get the corrupt policemen out of the system. They need to weed out because a lot of people know who these corrupt cops are, and the cops will not tell on each other.
You know what? Rocco 30 is hitting me up in the chat room. First, the first message was, snitching can be a dangerous thing. And then he went on to say, I don't know how people can make an entire new identity. Well, I want to speak to that. It's very difficult. Well, first of all, we can probably ask the thief because there's plenty of people out there that can create a new identity for you. So I'm not trying to make light of that. But, Rocco, before you joined us, we were saying how I actually have for today my husband on the line with us because he was accused of snitching even though he didn't, and we couldn't go out to the projects where his parents were because – he had the label over his head, like almost in the Scarlet Letter when Hester had to wear the A, that we were snitches. And so they were ready to drop me, our two kids, and him at a moment's notice. So what we did was we were already living in Jersey. We dared not venture back into that project, that particular project in Queens. So it's not as though we were able to start a new identity, but like he said, we had to literally move ourselves, and it was not easy. It was heartbreaking not seeing my in-laws for over a year. Yeah, he said, he just hit me back up in the chat room and said, that's so bad. Yeah, it sucks. But that's one of the results of living in the hood and one of the results of hood life. And that's just our reality. But I do want to preface that by saying there's snitches in white-collar crime all the time. So I want to make sure before we leave, we're down to the last 10 minutes of the show, and we're listening to our guest today is Adria Davis, the author of the book Snitchcraft. Her website is snitchcraft.com. And we had a special caller in today, my husband, who was accused of being a snitch. But you know what? I just want to say we have to make sure we don't walk away thinking that snitches are only derelicts and drug addicts like Bubbles in the TV show The Wire. Snitches come in all shapes, sizes, colors, as well as genders. Did you find that out as well, Adria, when you were writing your book and interviewing all of those people?
Oh, yeah. And then and the thing about the loyalty, I found out that anyone can become a snitch when faced with enough time. Just about anyone can become a snitch and tell a lie. But, yeah, all types of people. You know, they come from all walks of life. You know, some of them mean good, some of them don't. So that's where the gray area comes in. And then how do you, like you said, we're dealing with so much in our community. So what do we do to stop it? But I believe on that part of disappearing, the one great thing about many projects, I never lived in the projects, that's why I didn't try to answer the question, but mm-hmm. I do know people that came from the projects. And once they step a couple of miles out, the many people that are in there, they don't venture too far away.
No, they don't. So, I can tell you that.
Yeah, so you can sort of reinvent yourself as long as you go a couple of towns over, so you know,
mm-hmm.
or hit Connecticut or Jersey, and you're pretty good to go.
You're absolutely right, and I just want to share that Sweet Brown Skin hit us up in the chat room and said we cannot be afraid to stand for what is right, and you're absolutely right. That's the same thing that Drop and Seed Radio hit us up in the chat room earlier and said, I'm sorry, if my brother or sister committed a crime and I know, I will tell them because I love them. That's my loyalty. And I just want to share that Rocco30 hit me up in the chat room and said, I'm sorry you had to deal with that. Well, you know what? It sucked. It wasn't fun and it wasn't pretty, but it's reality. But the beauty of it, we lived in Jersey. So we really didn't have to. We dealt with it in a sense that we couldn't visit my in-laws, but on the same note, we still had a beautiful life with our children in Jersey, in a beautiful house in Jersey. And I didn't grow up in the projects, my husband did, but because we wanted to show our children other things, it probably worked out for the best anyway.
Hello.
That we just removed our family from that situation. We're down to the last 7 minutes. Charles, you're on the phone. I would like to give you a minute or so to finish up, and then I would like to our guest, Adria, to give our final thoughts. Is that cool with you, Adria?
Yes.
Perfect. Son, what would you like to share with us before you go?
I'd just like to say just watch your friends. If you're going to do something, do it by yourself. You're not going to tell on yourself. That way it keeps people from bothering you. If you're not going to tell on yourself, you're not going to do anything. So that's my little motto right there.
Thank you. Thanks for joining us today, and I appreciate it. Adria, you want to leave our guests with final thoughts for today?
Yes, I'd just like to say I really appreciate that's what I taught my children, and you need to hang alone. I had twins, so they had somebody to hang with. But also that people need to realize that sometimes what's written and the spin that they put in all these papers and everything is not what is reality. I know you know, and I know that we are spin doctors. This is what we did for a living. And so, you know, I know how many times that you know it's not the reality. Now, come on.
Yep.
You know, we don't want to call ourselves liars, but that's probably why you have to ease your way. I worked in entertainment. You have to ease my way out because it was like, okay, that was not true. But clearly people have to understand, do not believe what's out here in the media. You know, go find out for yourself and live your life right. And like you said, we know the difference between right and wrong. Stop. Look into the media and these rappers and everybody to tell you what is right and wrong. We know what's right and wrong.
You know, it's funny. A friend of mine, always says to me, we have these conversations of knowing the distinction between right and wrong, you know, just philosophical, religious questions. And you know what she said to me one day? She said, even a gay man knows to open a door for a woman.
Okay. I like that.
Right? And when she said that to me, she shut me down because, you know, we get into these philosophical, you know, when this, because I'm in youth ministry, so, you know, when do the sins fall on the kid and when is, you know, what's the parent's obligation? And I, you know, I'm quick to say I can't be responsible for my kids because they're their own person. I can teach them, but I can't make them do the right thing. So, you know, there are a lot of people out there that strongly disagree. And so I just remember telling her, well, I hope they do the right thing. And she said to me, Saida, even a gay man knows to hold the door open for a woman, which means we all know instinctively
if
to
you
do
taught,
the right
there
thing.
There are some that are not taught at all. But you know what? As long as you instill it, they'll come back. If they stray, I was always taught, if you stray, you'll come back because you know the right thing.
Well, you know what? We had a show on last week where I was saying how we had Play on, one half of the duo Kid and Play, and one of the things that we talked about is a lot of these young people don't have a Sunday school experience to refer back to. I deviated and went on and did my thing, and I'm partying and hooting and hollering and having a good time, but when I finally got tired of that, I had a Sunday school reference. I mean, I had a Sunday school experience which served as my point of reference to fall back to. Do you see what
right,
I'm saying?
Right,
just
right.
As my husband comes from a very Christian household, so he didn't go too far to the left. But a lot of these young people don't have a point of reference to refer their life to or to mirror their life after. So if Cameron is snitching, Jim Jones is snitching, 50's not snitching, little kid, they're going to be like, yo, they ain't snitching, I ain't snitching either.
Yeah, well, wait a minute, take it a step further. They're parents. Sitting there getting high and not snitching.
Yep.
You know, so
yep.
We're talking about a third generation of some real messed up parents.
Yeah.
You know? So we got problems.
Oh, yeah. And I was raised, funny enough, I was raised by my grandparents. I had teenage parents. See how history repeats itself? But I had teenage parents. And my grandmother, for the most part, raised me. And I'm loyal to that woman. She's 87 years old to a fault. And what happens is there are a lot of people that may not have had a Lillian. And so we've got people that are now in their 30s who were raised by crack-addicted parents.
Hello. There you go.
So now how can a crack addict properly raise a child? So they're getting their information. So you can't fault my children who are now teenagers because a lot of my peers as parents learned it from the streets
right. Because
our parents just were not there. And I think that speaks to exactly what you were saying about just how the parents and how they're being raised. We just got hit up. Oh, Rocco, you're so sweet. He said, you are a very intelligent host, and I hope to catch another one of your shows. Again, I'm sorry you had to deal with that, but at least you had a chance to enjoy life with your children in a happy place.
That's right.
You know what? Thank you so much, and thank you for the comment that I'm an intelligent host. Thank you.
Mm.
He's not even being paid to say that.
Okay.
Listen. You know, I'm always joking about that. Listen, I would love to have you back on my show, Adria. I really, 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 really would. We'll make it happen. You know, I have an amazing producer, and I thank her every day in every way. Shamika and I talk at 7 o'clock every single morning to get ready to bring these shows to you. And she was amazing in making things happen to bring you on. Would you say?
She's a together sister.
Oh, she is. She's the bomb. And I thank her in every piece of written material, anything I can think of. But we're down to the last 60 seconds of the show, and I just want to extend the invitation for you to come back, whatever you're working on. Thank you. Thank you. Everybody, you've listened to Adria Davis, author of the book Snitchcraft. Her website is snitchcraft.com. If you would like to get more information about the show, please log on to liferemixedradio.com. If you're a business owner or you offer a service and you would like to participate in our 360-degree advertising program, please call my office at 212 212- 560-8980, or you can shoot Shamika an email, and her email is booking@liferemixradio.com. For those of you in the New York City area, I'll be honored at the Unlocking Your Dreams conference taking place at the Holiday Inn in New York City on Saturday, August 9th. For more information, please log on to unlockyourdream.info. And as always, I want to thank you for listening and know that you can experience success in every area of your life. Thanks, God, and so it is.